Japan's having a lot of issues with tourists, and it's over tourism. But at the same time, the problem is Japan really wants people to come to Japan and spend their money. The weak yen is actually making it so that people can come here and spend a lot more money, which is good for the economy. They are finding, though, that, again, these cultural issues tend to crop up regularly. And so now cities are starting to make some changes. Shibuya, probably famous for being a party place, they banned drinking at Halloween. So you weren't allowed to drink in public. A lot of people, when they come to Japan, most places they come from, you're not allowed to drink in public. I'm Canadian. You're not allowed to just walk down the street and drink alcohol. In Japan, that is technically legal. Doesn't mean it's acceptable. Like, doesn't mean you should be doing it all the time. I have found when I first came, and when other foreigners first come to Japan, they're like, it's legal, therefore it's acceptable, therefore I can do it all the time. So they have like a drink on the train, they have a drink on the walk home, they're having drink, they're just drinking constantly outside. It is fun and exciting. Japanese people tend to have limits, like, okay, we're going to have a picnic, we'll have some drinks with our picnic. We're taking the Shinkansen, it's appropriate to drink a beer on the Shinkansen. That's kind of like a tradition almost. So you run into, yes, it is legal to drink in public, but is it socially acceptable? And the foreign people come here and they're basing their decisions on what is legal, not necessarily what is socially acceptable. Not massive problems until, of course, it gets out of hand. Shibuya drinking in public, it's gotten way out of hand. 2019, they did a small-scale version on Halloween because the previous year there was basically a riot. They, I think, pushed over a car, set a car on fire. I don't remember exactly, but they damaged property. They smashed some windows and stuff. It just went way too far. This wasn't foreigners, though. Like, foreigners were certainly included, but this was 90% Japanese people. So at first, it was just Halloween. Then it was Halloween and New Year's. And now they've decided it's not going to be just Halloween and New Year's. It's going to be all year round. They're making a larger punishment area, so basically all of Shibuya, it sounds like, you will not be allowed to drink in public. So what happens? Japan has a very interesting way of dealing with laws. There's no official punishment for getting caught drinking in public in Shibuya, because you haven't changed a national law. It's just been prohibited locally. So if a police officer approaches you and you have like a can of beer and you're drinking the can of beer, he's going to ask you to have the beer, and he's going to pour it out in the street. This is actually what happened. I remember this. I was a teenager, and if we went downtown in Ottawa for Canada Day, you could see a stream of alcohol, like combined alcohol, just running down the road, because the cops would basically walk around, find people, usually underage people or teenagers and stuff, drinking. They would take the drinks, they would just pour it out in the street. They didn't issue fines. No one got arrested. They're just like, look, you're not allowed to do that. Losing the alcohol you brought with you was probably punishment enough. It's not even all day. It's technically only in night. So it's between 6 p.m. and 5 a.m., which means if you really want to push the limits of what's acceptable with this rule, you could go and have lunch drinks in Shibuya and get wrecked in public. I don't know if that's what you want to do. If you want to be one of those people. So now I'm expecting, honestly, a live streamer to go and get super drunk in the middle of Shibuya in the middle of the day. And then, like, when the police approach him and ask him, like, what's going on? He says, like, this is legal. You can't stop me. Ha, ha, ha. I've found the loophole. And then they're going to get you for a public disturbance or obstruction of business. I mean, they just go for the classic obstruction of business. But what they're actually doing by not making a punishment, they're testing out, like, how effective this is going to be. Do we need to make punishments? Because if this works, people, you just walk up and be like, hey, you're not allowed to drink. Please give me a drink. I'll pour it out in the street. Thanks, on your way. If that's enough, they're not going to make it anymore. But if it isn't, then they'll start doing fines. Then they'll start doing jail time. Then they'll start increasing punishments over time. And that's how Japan tries to find a balance between the rules they're making and reality. So they're hoping that they don't have to do anything. They're hoping that, okay, here's a rule, follow the rule. No one gets in trouble. Nothing happens. That's great. But realistically speaking, people are going to immediately try to push the limits, as we're going to hear in our gubernatorial election section later on, which is just people trying to push the limits across the board. Welcome to the quiz.
Yes, I need to get some notepads.
My concern is I know that you have paid attention to the news, so you may have read that. This is actually something I haven't thought about, is I have to like check that my participants have not pre-read the news that I'm going to talk about. But there was a thing called the Ninja Certification Exam. Have you heard about that?
Is it a Ninja News certification exam?
No, completely unrelated. I am planning on suing.
No, I haven't heard of the Ninja certification exam. And just to put your mind at ease, I often read the headline and don't actually read the details. I wait for it to come on the podcast.
Honestly, that's even better because then we can talk about the details. So there's a thing. It's called the Ninja certification exam. It's a written test. There are three levels that cover history and ninjutsu. So I'm assuming the history of ninjas, not just history in general. And then ninjutsu, which I don't know, like how to disappear in a cloud of smoke. I'm not actually sure what that entails. I haven't been allowed to take the exam yet. The question is, what could you do to earn extra points at the lowest levels? The lowest level ninjas or wannabe ninjas could do something to earn extra points. There are three options. Okay.
Right.
A, hit a target with a shuriken.
Okay.
B, cosplay as a ninja. Or C, cast a spell using kujikiri, which is those Naruto hand gesture things. Do you know what I mean?
No. Like the...
Yeah, exactly that. You were just doing rings, but it's usually like pointy fingers and then curl your fingers in amongst... Yeah. A lot of that stuff. So you could hit a target with a shuriken, you could cosplay as a ninja, or you could cast a spell to get extra points. What do you think they did to give the lowest level potential ninjas extra points? You can ask questions. We can have a chat.
Yeah. What kind of spells are we talking about?
Well, it's like a joke spell. So it's you cast a spell on the examiner for extra points. So it's, again, even like cosplay and even hitting a target with a shuriken, they're all kind of jokes.
Right, okay. And is this ninja school, is it just for, is it like a touristy thing, like a weekend?
My belief, because the article was a little weird, because it said they had the exam, but didn't actually technically say what the exam for. But I know in like Iga, there's the ninja village, and they have tour guides who dress up as ninja. I went to visit it, and they have like the female ninja wears a bright pink uniform, which I was like, that's not hiding at all. But they have like a ninja show, and then Iga Castle has like a ninja house they've built that shows like the hidden passages and stuff. So there are tourist opportunities, and I know some towns that like claim to have the origins of ninja or the area, they'll have like shows and tourist bits. So I think that's what it was for, because you have to be able to explain stuff.
Right, okay. Right, so it's training to be a sort of...
a tour guide.
Yeah. My initial sort of gut thought was it would be hitting the target.
Hitting the target with a shuriken.
That was my initial thought, because I thought I've been to Iga as well, and they dragged me and another gaijin out of the audience. Like, oh, these gaijins won't be scared of taking part. And I had to throw a thing at a thing.
Yeah.
So
did you hit it? No, way more important. Forget the quiz. How did you do?
I did hit it.
Oh, good. Because at Iga Castle, I went there too. I took my mom. And you got three shots with a shuriken. If you hit the bullseye, you got a t-shirt. So it was actually surprisingly hard. I got the t-shirt. It was a medium. But I didn't complain. Yeah. I was happy to win.
A free t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did it. And it stuck in the thing, in the target.
That's pretty good.
The guy... said that was Sugoi, so I assume that means I could potentially be a trainee ninja.
Well, you could take the test at least. The written test.
Of course it's a written test.
It being Japan, there's always a written test. There's always a written test.
Yeah. Cosplay as a ninja. I mean, that's just putting on a ninja costume, isn't it?
Yes, it's a super Japanese thing to do, though.
So it is, but is that worth extra points? It seems like you're just giving someone free points at that. For that, there's no actual skill or anything involved, is there?
I personally think that's the lamest option.
So I'm gonna nod. It's definitely not that, because it's just because you would have to surely you would have to wear a ninja costume to even be in the ninja school. You already went, so yeah, you're getting 3 points just to turn up. So it's gonna be the hand gesture or the target thing.
Now, this is some heavy thinking we got going on.
Yes,
strategizing.
So I was dragged out of a crowd and got to do it. And there's no lower level than ninja than me.
Yes.
And But
I hope it's not insulting that I agreed that quickly, but
I'm wearing black.
you.
But the hand gesture thing does take a bit of coordination and thought and studying to learn how to do the hand moves.
I, as a joke, tried to learn some of the hand moves. There are 81 hand symbols and 9 primary ones. So if you learn the 9 primary ones, there's combinations. And just as a joke, I tried to learn 1 or 2 so I could do it to kids. And I honestly couldn't do it. My fingers are not nimble enough.
So that sounds like it's higher level than...
I felt like that was actually kind of hard.
Which makes me think back to my gut reaction of the target. But then again, Japan is a safety country. Are they going to let basic trainees do that?
To start hucking stuff around?
I'm going to go with my initial gut reaction of the hitting the target with a shuriken as the credit.
You are incorrect. It is no! B. It is the lamest one. You had to if you cosplayed as a ninja, you got extra points on your ninja written exam.
So there's all these potential tour guides sat in a thing in a classroom somewhere taking a written exam dressed as ninjas.
Yeah. I mean, if they put the effort in, it would be weird to me if you were going to go for that exam to not put that effort in, though. But it was also only the low level ones. I guess there's an expectation that the higher level ones are doing it because there are 3 levels, which I would like an ex. This is the problem with some of this news is there's only so much explanation that goes into these sort of fluff stories. yeah. But if you pass the exam, you get a scroll and the title Koka Ninja. Ooh.
Nice.
So you get to be called, you can call yourself Koka Ninja for the rest of your life, I assume.
Surely, unless they have the test on a different day, or it's not in the actual ninjutsu-y stuff area, it's in like a office building.
There was a picture and it looked like a classroom.
Right.
So yeah, I bet it's just like a tourist office and they have like a conference room and they throw them in the conference room. That would be my guess. There is an extra points though, so you can try to make up for it. How many participants do you believe participated in the ninja exam? It would include all 3 levels.
Are all 3 levels all written?
What they were talking about is the answer is yes. It was an exam. There were 3 levels of the written exam.
Thank you. How many sat the test?
Yeah, how many? So all one big group, how many people do you think were in that group?
I'm going to say 47.
47.
So is that
how did you come to that number?
Well, I think it's Japan wide.
It is Japan wide.
Tourism is booming at the moment. So there's probably a need for people dressed as ninjas throwing plastic ninja stars around.
Yep. I agree with all that.
So there's probably already quite a lot of ninjas are already trained. And I know that a company that I used to work for usually brought in around 100 teachers a year ish. Mm. So I'm going to say half of that about. That was my thinking.
It is 124.
Oh.
That's a lot of ninjas. Yeah. That is a whole clan of ninjas.
But they might not all pass though.
That is true. We don't get the failure rate. I was trying to look up for any sort of results, but once they've written their piece, they move on. So I didn't get how many actual ninjas passed the exam. Because we have no idea if it's a hard exam or not. When they say history, it'd be pretty easy to fail the history part if you didn't take history very seriously. And then the ninjutsu part, who knows what they're asking on that?
Yeah. And yeah, you know, Kenji might have turned up and he might have forgotten his ninja costume and really needed those extra points.
Yeah, he didn't get those extra points. He was always 2 points shy and then he didn't wear his costume.
And, you know, if you're going to be a ninja, you're going to need to get over the shyness of wearing a ninja outfit, I think.
Well, once you're a real ninja, no one will ever see you again.
That's true, yeah.
I figure the high level for extra points, you have to turn in your exam without anyone seeing you.
Yeah.
Like it just appears. Where did it come from?
Yeah. You've got to, like, managed to get to back home through an elaborate underground tunnel system
without anyone knowing.
Yeah. I wonder if other countries have Italy has like a little Roman legionnaire school because all those places need
people who dress up. Yeah, because Canada has Edmonton. Edmonton has this like rodeo festival. It's one of the biggest things in Canada. So they got to have people dressed up as cowboys. Now in that area, people dress up as cowboys anyways, but I'm assuming there's no actual exam. This Japan to me is a very like, let's make a paper exam for it. Because I think in Calgary Stampede, which is what this festival is called, they're getting actual people who work with cows. Like they're actual cowboys. I did judo in Canada. I came here and I wanted to do some tests here to get a higher level. There's a paper test in Japan. There's no paper test in Canada. You go out and you do fights and you do like this like presentation thing of showing how to do something really, really well. And then they grade you. In Japan, you do those two things and you sit for a paper test, which is all Japanese and really hard old kanji, which I couldn't read. So I gave up.
Of course, there's always a test.
It's always a paper test. It's such a Japanese thing to do. Yeah, taking a sport and making a paper test.
I've had students in the past wanting to be tour guides take like a World Heritage Site test, paper test. And it's like, but you're going to be a tour guide in Japan. Why do you need to learn about the Taj Mahal? It's just, I don't know.
Maybe they can do comparisons. They go, here's our castle. It's like the Taj Mahal of Japan.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Which is what they would do in Japan. They'd always be comparing it to something else.
Look at this Edo Wall. It's just like the Great Wall of China.
It's a really good wall. All right. Well, thank you for your participation. Your participation in the test. We'll count that up. I actually have to start keeping track of success and failure rate of this. But yeah, thank you for your help.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Speaking about tourists, Himeji Castle, fairly famous castle, last year had 1.48 million visitors. So that's a lot of people. And they make a lot of money because all those people pay money to go see the castle. 450,000 of those people were foreign tourists. Now, I didn't take time to do the statistics, the actual ratio of what percentage is that? But if it's 1.48 million, it's 450,000 foreigners. It was like 1 million Japanese people and 500,000 foreigners. That's going to do very rough math. The current entry fee to the castle is 1,000 yen for everybody. The mayor is suggesting that foreigners only pay 3,000 yen for entry. And a lot of people are saying, well, why would you charge foreigners more? This is one of the issues that's going on. Restaurants, some restaurants are deciding to charge foreign people more. We did a story previously where if you were a foreign person, there was a foreign menu with a foreign price and then a local menu with a local price. And it's divisive because is it acceptable to force someone who isn't Japanese to pay more money for the exact same service? The mayor's justifying this suggestion by saying he's comparing it to the Louvre or spots in Egypt. So the Louvre, apparently, if you're local, it's free. And if you're foreign, you have to pay. I don't know about Egypt, but I'm assuming, again, foreigners have to pay a certain amount of money to go see things in Egypt, whereas maybe locals pay a lower fee, similar to what he suggested for Himeji Castle. He's also justifying it by saying they need money for maintenance, but there is a concern that it may turn off foreigners. So like if foreigners find out they pay more money for this attraction where locals pay the same amount of money, well, then I'm not going to go to that attraction. It'll actually take away, potentially, 500,000 visitors a year. So is it worth increasing the price for less people to show up and maybe making less money overall? It's very hard to tell. It will be interesting to see, A, do they go through with it? Because they're just in the discussion phase now. Or B, do other places start taking on this model where then any tourist who comes to Japan suddenly is paying more for everything as opposed to paying the same price everyone else pays. And then I'm in the unique situation where I'm a resident of Japan. What do they do with me? Because I'm a white guy, do I have to pay more? Because I live in Japan, I've lived in Japan for a very long time. Do I pay the Japanese fee? How do you know the difference? I do have a residential card. So I have a identification that says, I live in Japan, I've lived in Japan for a long time. That probably would be enough to get me the local rate, but I could see myself getting annoyed that they even like suggest it. Even though, again, quite obviously, I am not Japanese. We're going to talk about bears. Bears have actually cropped up a lot in stories recently. Bears versus Japan. There was a town, it's a small town, and they have, basically in Hokkaido and all these places, they have like hunters associations. These are the people who legally own firearms. They can go out and hunt animals, and that would include bears that have encroached on society. So you got bears coming into towns, you need someone to scare away or, worst case scenario, actually kill the bear. These are the guys you got to call. You got to pay these guys. Now, hunting a bear, fighting a bear essentially, is dangerous. And this town and the hunting association closely related to that town could not come to an agreement. They wanted to give them 3,000 yen danger pay. So they're like, hey, we want you to go face this very angry, hungry bear. I'll give you $30. And it's one of those things, it's like as a dare, you're like, well, that's not enough money. Like, if I get mauled by the bear, 3,000 yen isn't going to do that much for me. It's not really worth it. So now they're in the weird situation where they are not going to protect the town. Now, I guess you could call the cops, but the cops, again, they have very small pistols and they're not equipped to really take on a bear. So that means the bear now in this town has free reign. In a different city, in Fukui, a bear entered a house and the woman called the cops and she crawled out a window. So the bear, it sounds like, came in through the front door. Maybe the front door wasn't locked or the front door was left open. It is getting close to summertime. It's hot. Maybe trying to get some airflow for you, whatever. I have no idea why or how the bear got in the house. The woman calls the cops, and then she hauls it out a window. Pretty good move on her part. I don't know if she did a flip. I don't know why I suddenly thought that. It'd be cool to flip out the window as you run away, but it'd be even cooler to backflip. So the cops then surround the house. They're on standby outside the house, and that was it. Like, there was no follow-up. They don't say how long they're on standby. They don't say anything happened. So if we take this story at face value, those cops are still standing outside that house. And I guess that bear just owns that house now. It'd be weird. Like, we see our houses as safe places. That's kind of the whole point of a house. And then once a bear's come into your house and he's lived in your house for maybe as long as you have, because he's apparently not left the house, what happens then? Like, do you feel safe in your house anymore? Do you get like, oh, I'm going to lock the doors all the time? That kind of thing. Who knows? I don't know how I'd feel. I don't deep sleep. When I was a little kid, my dad made me a root bedroom in the basement, which was really cool. He liked to build stuff. I liked to be sort of apart from the family because I was a rebellious, weird little kid. I was like 9 years old, but that meant my bed was sitting under one of those little basement windows. And if you're going to break into a house, you generally go in through one of those little basement windows. There was one night I was in bed and a man stepped on my head. He came in through the window, came down, stepped on my head. I screamed and freaked out and he ran away. So very technically nothing happened, but also someone broke into the house and stepped on my head. Since then, fairly traumatic experience. I think that's fair to say. I do not deep sleep. Any sound that happens during the night, I will wake up. And this is like 40 years later. And that's it. It's just the rest of my life, I'm assuming till I die, I will be an incredibly light sleeper. I will never know what it is to deep sleep ever again because of that. So I'm wondering if this woman maybe has a similar situation with her bear experience, or if maybe now she just knows she's going to lock all the doors. I don't know. How do you be more careful? It's a bear. So you're walking along the coast and you're with your family and it's really nice. And then your young child, your son, slips and falls into the water. Now it's a 6-foot drop into the water off this like coastal walkway. That's already a rough fall for a kid, but he's in the ocean. The ocean's going pretty hard. A 26-year-old Filipino man just immediately jumps in after and he saves the kid. So they get some nets and stuff down so they can help him climb up, and they help the kid climb up first, and then the man climbs up. He saved this kid's life. That's pretty awesome. The parents wanted his name to say thank you. It's very traditional. Like, if someone finds your wallet or does something for you, you send them a thank you present. So like, if you find something and turn it into the police, and then the person shows up and they get it back, they'll send you a thank you. I found a wallet, turned it into the cops. I ended up getting a cake the next week, just showed up at my house. So this is a normal Japanese thing, to want to say thank you in some way, usually by sending some, you know, it's not cheap, but it's not nothing, but it's a little present. The Filipino man said, "Nanoru hodo no mono dewa nai." I don't know, I should practice that a couple times. This is a Japanese lesson for today. "Nanoru hodo no mono dewa nai." Nanoru. Nanoru hodo. Yeah, probably those go together. Nanoru hodo no mono. Nanoru hodo no mono dewa nai. He's probably saying it way cooler than I am. And this is a phrase that he probably learned from anime. This being a non-native Japanese speaker, there's already an assumption that he's using this sentence because he's either watched a ton of old samurai movies or he's really into anime where they say this kind of thing. Translated into English, this means, "I'm not important enough for people to know my name." So when you win the big fight, when you save the town, when you protect people, and they go like, who are you? This is the phrase you use in these sort of old movies and in your anime and in your manga. Nanoro hodo no mono de wa nai. I can't say it cool. I gotta actually get an example of like an anime character saying it so I can copy that. Because I'm sure my inflection's wrong and my spacing of the words is wrong. But I'll say it one more time super slow so that you can get it and you can practice this. Nanoru hodo no mono de wa nai. Okay, so you can take that, take some time, practice it, chorus it to yourself. Maybe find some examples of it on the internet, and awesome. You can now say this really cool thing, but you have to do something cool first. You can't just walk around saying that. You have to actually do something cool. This might be the problem for most people. Saying, doing something cool and then saying something cool. Also, it kind of means like study your anime, because everyone on the internet who heard that he said this after doing this really cool thing was like, dude, this is the coolest guy ever. He's using the lines. He's using the lines properly. He's representing the humble hero, which is really cool. I have only said two cool lines in my life, and it was totally by accident. And so I once gave my judo suit, both related to judo, of course. I once gave my judo suit to my wife because she was going to wash it that night. And she said, oh my God, so much blood. And I looked at her and said, don't worry, it's not mine. Yeah, that was awesome. And again, because I didn't intend it to be cool, it turned out super cool. And then once I was doing like a meeting with some people who had just come to Japan, and of course, judo comes up because it's like, what are your hobbies? What do you do? I do judo, da, da, da. And one goes, have you ever broken a bone? And I looked and I said, do you mean mine or someone else's? Ah, that was awesome. Again, for me, it was a legitimate inquiry. Have I ever broken one of my own bones, or have I in judo, which does have like arm locks and stuff, broken someone else's bone? But because, again, it was unintentionally cool, I didn't try to be cool. It was actually way cooler that way. Scandal. No, this is the least scandalous scandal I've seen in so long. Some top Japanese skateboarders took part in underage drinking. I, 14, 15, 16, was a very, very serious skateboarder. It is basically at that point in life, I thought the job I'm going to have for the rest of my life is going to be professional skateboarder. I was trying to figure out if I could move to California. I made a little video of myself skateboarding that I could send to Dogtown. Now, I wasn't that good. Like I was, okay, wait. I was very, very good for a complete amateur, but I was nowhere near professional quality. And I think by the time you're 15, 16 in the skateboard world, you either have it or you don't. And I did not have it. I was good. I was always going to be okay, but I was never going to be professional. This was during an Olympic qualification trip to China. And in Japan, the drinking age is 20. In China, the drinking age is 18. So if they're all 18 or 19 in China, it's perfectly legal for them to drink. So I think this is what happened. They didn't give everyone's age because they said group. I think they were all 18, 19, 20 year olds skateboarders. I guess this is it. Skateboarders are going to drink if you let them drink. They were in a different country where it's legal for them to drink. They're like, hey, let's go out and legally drink. So they went out and they legally drank and they had a good time. Then Japan has got this weird idea of holding people to Japanese laws and rules, even when they leave Japan. They have said that if you go to a place like Canada where marijuana is legal and you smoke marijuana or take like a brownie or cookie or whatever they deliver it in, and then you come back to Japan, you've committed a crime. They say if you go overseas and you create uncensored pornography, you've broken a law in Japan. And so this is it. They have this weird idea. I don't actually know how you would prosecute this. That might be why these guys are just getting in trouble, because they are representatives of Japan in another country. So they're probably partially funded by the government. I don't know how well that goes, because if you're going for an Olympic qualifier, you probably have taken money from the government, which does mean the government does have a little say in how you behave overseas. You're sort of like an ambassador to your country. You have to behave better, that kind of thing. None of the skateboarders themselves were reprimanded. The coach was, which I think is pretty fair. He didn't get like fired. He didn't get in trouble in any real way. They're like, dude, you got to control your skateboarders. He's probably looking at them going like, these are like 19-year-old adults overseas. They're taking care of themselves. I don't know really what you want me to do. So I think reprimanding the coach, having him say like, you should have kept these guys inside and stuff, I think that's fair. As long as he doesn't get into any actual trouble. Because again, no law was, the way it was presented when I saw it in Japanese news was like a crime has been committed. Like they've broken the law, which they actually very technically had not done. And you know, technically right is the best kind of right. I can hear the voices out there. When I was a skateboarder and I was 14, 15 years old, did I ever underage drink? Never. It's actually funny. Like, I talk to Canadians. I'm like, how old were you when you had your first drink? It seems like 13, 14 is really normal. I had one beer. I don't like beer. I don't do acquired tastes. I had one beer when I was like 15 years old or 14 years old, and I didn't like it. And I was just like, nope, never had beer again. So that's actually probably a good thing. Like, if I had it later, I might have liked it and then be a beer drinker now. Anyways, we're on to the gubernatorial election news. And this is actually quite a lot. An aide to the current Tokyo governor, Yuriko Koike, claims that she faked her degree. How do you become the governor of a prefecture and they don't know if you've actually got a degree or not? So now there's this big thing out there. Like, this is someone who worked for her who claims she faked her degree. The claim is that she did not graduate from the University of Cairo. Koike, in response, said she's unhappy at the allegation. She says she will continue to list herself as a graduate of Cairo University. Now, I looked at that sentence. I've done a lot of political stories on Ninja News Japan. I look very carefully at what they're actually saying, because that's the more interesting thing. How they say it, what they're saying, is the important part. In this case, she has not denied the allegation. She said, I will continue to list myself as a graduate of the University of Cairo. That doesn't mean she actually got her degree or could prove she has her degree from the University of Cairo, which is a very interesting, very small distinction. Another interesting thing she's done lately is on X.com, she started posting short videos of her explaining her policies, but it's not actually her. It's actually an AI version of her moving her mouth and face and then speaking her policies with an AI version of her voice. And that is an interesting thing, because now these videos of her explaining things can be generated by her staff and put on the internet like she's talking to you. And a lot of people, again, this is very mixed feelings. AI's big issue right now, generating a lot of mixed feelings. Should she be doing it personally? Is this good enough? Is AI a threat? And she's saying, look, we have these technologies at our hand. We should use technologies that are available to us. I'm using this technology to get my policies out into the world. And then, of course, the first set of comments under her videos are, did you have AI generate your degree from the University of Cairo? Which is awesome. In Tokyo, it's gotten very specific, and this is primarily about posters. So in Japan, most of your election knowledge, most of my election knowledge comes from the American system, which is all blasting ads and news and stuff. America dominates the news cycle, even in other countries. So a lot of what I understand of politics is influenced very heavily by the American system. The Canadian system, honestly, very similar, but way more low-key. There's a lot of TV advertising stuff. Japan has very strict rules. You can't really do the same thing. There's a couple weeks where you can get out on top of a truck and then speak into a microphone and shout it out that way. You can't just plaster posters or ads everywhere. There is actually a set, like, big board, and then you, as someone running in the race, can put your poster on that board. It's very weird the first time you see it. And 99% of these posters are nondescript. It's some very Japanese looking businessman thumbs upping the camera and just looking forward with a very awkward smile. Sometimes they've got some kind of like hook, and like, I used to play soccer, so he's holding a soccer ball, something like that. So they're trying to put as much personality as they can into a very awkward photo shoot. This system has been hijacked in Tokyo. 56 people have entered, and they can put up posters. They're mostly politicians, but 19 of the 56 places are from the NHK party. Now, this is not the actual NHK party. They used to be called the anti-NHK party because they hated NHK and the fact that you had to pay fees to this national broadcasting company. But they've become a party that's essentially trolling politics, trying to get messages out there that are not big issues or overly popular, but they're still, you know, actually a lot of ways kind of important, because they're things people are either embarrassed or too shy to talk about. So the first one that I really enjoyed was a female kickboxer. She took up half the slots. So if you have like 60 spaces for posters. 30 of those were the same poster she paid for. And it's just her saying, like, I'm a kickboxer. Not even like, I want to be governor. I'm a kickboxer and I'm a really good kickboxer and you should follow me on Instagram and watch me kickbox. Another candidate got a warning from the police for making a poster that is of an almost nude woman posing in what they called a very sexy pose. Their platform is talking about censorship in Japan. This is the same group. I did this story previously, but I can't remember how long ago, where they talked about how if Japan would open up its censorship laws and like not use pixelization in their pornography, that Japan could make a lot more money with the pornography that they have. We have done stories where it's like the ranking of pornography has come out from Pornhub, and it's always like Japan or Japanese is really high in the ranking. And so this guy's saying we should capitalize on this love for this thing our country does make, and we are holding it back by being too conservative. He's teamed up with actress Sakurai Miyu, a very specific kind of actress, if we're going to be clear. And they wanted to end nudity censorship laws and promote freedom of expression. Because she was basically naked, I think they had little flowers over the bits that need to be censored. The police came and said, you have to take the posters down. So then this guy who had decided, like, I'm going to promote this porn star and put up these posters and make my issue censorship. He's like, I'm going to pivot. Since I'm not allowed to put those posters up, I'm going to pivot to making cannabis legal in Shibuya. So marijuana, cannabis is illegal in Japan. It's actually still very seriously. They don't like classify drugs in order. It's just drugs bad. So heroin and marijuana are in the same group as far as drugs are concerned. So if you smuggle in heroin and you smuggle in marijuana, same punishment across the board, which a lot of people are like, other countries, they like grade it. Like marijuana is not as bad as heroin. In Japan, that's considered like a slippery slope. So they're just like, no. Drugs bad. If it's a bad drug, you did a bad thing, you get the exact same sentence. So he's pivoted his platform to try to make posters. He also puts on face paint like the Joker and stuff. That actually in itself makes me take it less seriously. If you wanted to do this seriously, he should just wear a suit and look as normal as possible and just start very seriously talking about censorship laws. And don't even get like salacious on the posters. And I bet you'd get a lot of support, because one of the hardest things to do is to take something that is essentially embarrassing. Like, I look at pornography and I want to de-censor pornography. Again, he's thinking about the economy. I'm actually kind of on board with this as a concept. If there is an economic gain for the country by doing this thing, it might be worth doing. Sure, regulate the industry. I actually have no problem with that. I think safety is very important. But because he like dresses up and puts on a face paint and tries to look like a Joker and stuff, it immediately goes, well, why would I take you seriously? So he's actually undermining his own potential of actually getting one of these, you might be considered a side issue, into the forefront. Of course, there's commentary. The news did interviews with people on the street, and one man says it does not communicate their policies at all. And I was like, well, no, it does, because the kickboxer, her policy is, I really like kickboxing and kickboxing is cool and you should follow me online. It's a pretty clear policy. It doesn't apply to Japan in any real way, unless she wants to make kickboxing like a national thing that everyone has to do, which would be crazy. And then the censorship one with the almost naked lady on it, I mean, the policy is pretty clear. We would like to stop censoring this. There were a lot of complaints that they were putting up like basically a naked lady on a poster where kids go by, which again, I'm actually on board with that, which is another reason to do it in a more serious vein where people actually might take a moment and actually listen to what you're talking about. The policy is, I like kickboxing and I like sexy ladies. Shibuya drinking in public has gotten way out of hand. Does mean the government does have, which does mean the government does have